is used every day, and it is left running. African children need water, and we waste it. The world would be nothing without water. Every human being needs water to survive. Rivers are being contaminated by many people. Conserving water will mean a better future. No one wants to conserve water, but we must. Someone will rise and convince people. Even if more people conserve water, it still won't change. Really poor people cry for water every day. Value water. Without it, you will die. A lot of people think we don't need water. Together, we can make a difference. I tried to conserve water. Other people should conserve water too. Now everyone can make a change.
Thank you, Connor. That was a poem written by Eddie Mesquita, a fifth grader in the New York school system. And Connor, you did a very good job. Thank you. Now let us turn to our neighbors and say good morning and share something of what you most value about water, if you can. Jake has just shared with me that he likes water because it's healthy, good food. Welcome, everyone, on this fine October morning. As we gather together in this place, let us be thankful for water and the gift of life. Let us be thankful for the water we drink, we use to wash our clothes, cups, spoons, bowls, plates, and pots, the floors, walls, and ourselves. The water we use to go to the bathroom, that's important. The water we swim in, that helps our garden grow. Let us be mindful that 1 out of 9 people on this earth have inadequate water supply. Let us do what we can to bring water to everyone in need of its life-giving properties.
I lived in Morocco for 2 years as a Peace Corps volunteer, and I got to experience meeting and living with people who had no access to safe potable water or very limited access to safe potable water, and, you know, fearing for their children dying of dysentery on a daily basis. And so that impacted me a lot in, you know, realizing just how important water is to our existence. So Jake's going to help me light the chalice.
I call your attention to the announcements in our order of service, and we have a couple in addition to those. Tuesday is the last Sunday today, not Tuesday, today is the last Sunday to sign up for this month's fellowship dinner on Friday, October 12th, to be held at Ann Cowan's house. Both old and especially new people who are attending this fellowship are invited to join us for an evening of food, a good food and great conversation. There's a sign-up sheet back there on the bulletin board in the narthex. For more information, either contact Ann Martian or Jim Chanteau. Jim, would you raise your hand? There you go. Thank you very much. And if you hadn't noticed, we have a cornucopia of frost-saved produce sitting out there. So take a leak and leave a farthing. Let us stand as we are able and sing if we want to. We sing now together, but let us sing with joy if possible. Number 67.
That's pretty low.
Okay.
We sing now together our song of thanksgiving, rejoicing in goods which the ages have wrought, for life that enfolds us and helps and heals and holds us and leads beyond the goals which our forebears once sought. We sing of the freedoms which martyrs and heroes have won by their labor, their sorrow, their pain, the oppressed befriending, our ampler hopes defending. Their death becomes a triumph, they died not in vain. We sing of the prophets, the teachers, the dreamers, the climbers, creators, and workers, and seers, our own lives expanding, our gratitude commanding. Their deeds have made immortal their days and their years. We sing of community now in the making, in every far continent, region, and land, with those of all races, all times and names and places. We pledge ourselves in covenant firmly to stand.
Thank you. Now is the time in our order of service when we set aside all of the lists that we have going on in our heads of things to do and recall something that brings joy to our hearts or some shadow. So it's a time to share a personal joy or concern.
I got a call from Steve last night, but I wasn't home. I was at dinner, and he was concerned that I not call him back, that he would call me back because it would cost money, but I have unlimited service, and I just didn't have a chance last night because we watched a debate with John Stewart and Bill O'Reilly at the Yankees, and then there was something else I had to laugh about. And so this afternoon, maybe at lunch, I have my cell phone and his number, and I'll call them back then.
All right. Is that a joy and a concern?
Both.
All right. Ann. Oops.
I have a big joy this weekend to introduce my parents, John and Janet Bryan, up here from Naples, Texas.
Welcome.
Ann Cowan, I have a sort of sadness, maybe for all of us, that this morning Yvonne Lacey made her final move to Colorado. So I'm sure she'll be back to visit at some point, but she won't be here on a regular basis.
So for those joys and concerns that have been shared, we know that each of us carry joys and concerns in our hearts that often go unspoken. Let us acknowledge them in the ways that we can. Now's the time for the children's conversation, so I need all the kids who would like to help me, come on up. Good morning, good morning, good morning. How is everyone today? Good? All right. I have a question. Does anybody know what that is?
A plant.
A plant? What kind of plant?
Like a kind of fir bush? Like.
It is a kind of fir bush. What else do you notice about it? Jake?
It's a spiky plant.
It's what?
It's a spiky plant.
Oh, it's a spiky plant. Can you tell me the difference between this plant and that plant?
The pink one has petals on it, but the other one was brown.
That's a very good observation. Another one. Nick?
The top one looks really dry, but the bottom one looks like it has water.
Ah, the golden answer. Thank you very much, Nick. Yes. This is a mugo pine, which, if well established, usually makes it in our climate. But this summer, on the south side of our porch, it was so hot that there was not enough water that could go to this plant to keep it alive. So it died. Water, like we do, the plants like we do need water, right? Look at this one. I've kept this geranium alive for 2 years, but it kind of hid behind a fountain where it only got a little bit of sun. And now that it's gotten cooler, look at it. It's just blooming away. But what does it need to survive?
Water.
Water, absolutely. It needs water. So here I have a little question for you. If you were going to say, how much water do we have in our bones? We have water in our bones. Did you know that? What? Yeah? Okay, great. So, here's some water, and pretend this is your body, right? How much water should I pour in to equal the amount of water you have in your bones? Tell me when to stop, okay?
Stop.
Not enough. Not enough. How about there? Maybe a little more. 14% of our bones are made of water. Can you believe that? Yes, it's true.
I know what?
What?
Water is inside your bones.
Yeah, water is in your...
And it's inside your skin.
Yeah.
It
makes your skin float. Very good. So, water is a liquid. So, now tell me, how much water do you think you have in your body? I'll start pouring. And again, you tell me when you think I've reached. Just pretend like this is your body. Tell me when you think I've reached as much water as you have in your body.
Stop.
You got that much water? Do you know how much water is in your body?
No.
If you were divided up into three parts, two parts would be water. Can you believe that?
No.
It's true. It's true. All right. All right, now how much water do you think you have in your brain? Where's your brain? The head, right? How much of your brain do you think is made up of water? Let's see. Is that enough?
No.
Is that enough?
No.
Is that enough?
No.
Yeah, I think it's about right. Let's just put a little more to make sure. 75% of your brain is water. So if you divided your brain into four parts, three of them would be water. So, that's a lot of water, right?
Yeah.
So, how about your blood? What do you think blood is made of?
Red.
Red? It's red? Yes?
Water.
Okay, tell me how much water you think your blood has, okay?
That much.
That much? No, not enough? All right, a little more? How about that? I think a little more.
Yeah.
How about that?
No.
How much do you think that is?
It's this much tall.
It's that much tall. How much of that bowl would you say it was? Pretty tall? Yes, Connor. Ah, very close. You would think I have given you the answer. It's 83% of your blood is water. So without the water in your blood, we could not breathe, we could not do all the kinds of things like eat and digest and grow. So water is absolutely essential to every part of your body. Your body cannot live without water. So are you thankful for water on a hot day? Do you go like this? Or do you have a dog that does that? And they drink a whole big bowl of water after they've been running outside, right? And do you do the same? Do you drink out of a bowl or a glass? A glass. Good. All right. So are you guys thankful for water? All right. That's great. Thank you so much for helping me demonstrate how important water is. All right. Peace.
Go now in peace. May the spirit of love surround you everywhere you may go. Milo wanted me to talk on what rain means to me and to Alan as farmers, previously mostly. So, what does rainwater mean to me? What does rainwater mean to you? How many of you depend on rain for a major part of your income? Now, isn't any a major part of your income? Farms, yeah. Okay, there's... Take your word for it. anyway, it just seems a really crazy thing to do in Kansas, to depend on rain for your income. But that's what farmers do. They're the biggest gamblers there are. We farmed for 20 years, and we now rent the ground to our cousins. We've never totally lost a crop because of lack of rain, but the amount and the timing of the rain really made a difference in the yield. Some years were pretty sparse and some years were good. Our Grade A dairy was our bread and butter. The wheat crop was used to either buy machinery or a new car or save for college education for the kids. We did lose a crop completely one year due to frozen rain, hail. Developing an appreciation of a good rain takes experience on a farm. A niece, Jill, while in high school in the big city of Chicago, wanted to experience life on Rhonda's farm. Rhonda Yonke's our daughter, who most of you know, who has a big organic garden. Well, Jill knew there would be a lot of work involved. She'd seen the garden beds when her family visited us at Christmas time. Well, Jill worked hard, and one of the jobs of the taking care of the garden was dragging those water hoses around to keep all the plants watered during a very hot and dry spell that we were having that summer. Well, this city girl, who had probably only noticed a rain if it was an inconvenience, you know, spoiled a picnic, had to take an umbrella to walk to school or something, she called home and she said, "Mom, it rained. We won't have to water." She had really developed an appreciation of rain. It took a while after leaving the farm for the city life to quit running pitchers of water when a big storm was approaching. Now, why would I do that? The pump for the well ran on electricity. If the storm knocked out our electricity, we had no water. We also took, the kids and I would take showers early, and I know you're not supposed to during a lightning storm, but we did, and we're still alive. And we would put the plug in the tub so there would be water for Alan when he came in from doing chores in case he needed to take a shower after the electricity went out. Or not a bath, well, it'd be a bath, not a shower. Well, rain still affects our income. Our cousin would have planted soybeans after the wheat was harvested this summer, but the ground was too dry, and no rain came for months and months, as you all know. So he didn't plant the soybeans because it cost $72 an acre just for the seed. The soybeans would have increased our income a few thousand dollars, but it's not there. Oh, well, that's the life of a farmer. Come see, come saw. Whatever will be, will be.
I noticed that I've forgotten the offertory, but let's do it after this part of the service. This afternoon, I will have the pleasure of going to visit Tom Page, who has just turned 75. He joined the fellowship a little over a year ago. He's been on dialysis and is probably approaching the last months of his life. And so we're going, a few of us, to celebrate his life because he was a writer and wrote a number of poems that were published across the country. And I'd like to share two of them that I think relate to today's topic. This is my recurring image of spring. In 1943, Uncle Willie and I fished along the banks of the Little Arkansas, just south of 18th Street. We left our poles in the bushes along the bank and brought new bait each day. Took our catfish home for supper. This is my strongest image of now. Driving home along the country road, I see the beer cans and wrappers. There's a large cardboard box north across the road and other junk. Last summer, I filled two sacks with cans and paper from our ditches. I'd like to take my own little Willie fishing on the Arkansas, but can't. The river is polluted. The fish contain mercury, and the Marmaton is full of tires. There will be other springs or so, I hope. Friends, the earth is dying. What passes for our vision will make it happen. Water, the gift of life. Generally, astrobiologists agree that life needs a liquid medium for transporting the molecules necessary for life's existence. For life on Earth, this liquid medium is water. Sometimes when I eat my lunch or dinner here at the fellowship and have made my meal, I am just so anxious when I go to wash my dishes, because it takes about a minute for the hot water to get to that sink. And at home, we would never turn on the hot water to wash our dishes. We put the water in a kettle. That's what it means when you live on a well that depends on rain. Without water, we can't survive. Next to air, water is the most essential element to human life. The body usually can't survive more than a week without it. Water is essential to the functioning of every single cell and organ system in our body. Water makes up greater than two-thirds of the weight of our human body. The brain, as I said, 75%, blood 83%, bones not 14%, 22%, I'll have to go tell them this. Muscles are 75%, and lungs, which allow us to take in the breath and release the breath, 90% water. Water is essential for the efficient elimination of waste products through the kidneys. Water regulates body temperature through perspiration. Water serves as a lubricant. Water forms the fluid surrounding our joints and bones, providing the cushion we need so they don't rub against each other. Water prevents and alleviates constipation. Water helps the body to absorb nutrients in the intestines. Water plays a role in regulating metabolism. Water forms the base of saliva, necessary for consuming and digesting of the chemical processes which occur in our body. Water plays a role in the prevention of disease. Drinking adequate amounts of water can reduce the risk of colon and bladder cancer significantly. And some studies have suggested that water may also decrease the risk of breast cancer. What happens when the human body does not get enough water? A decrease as little as 2% of our water supply, our body's water supply, can have harmful effects. Dehydration, and then we can experience daytime fatigue. You know, that afternoon blahs when we're really tired. Instead of a cup of coffee, they suggest a couple glasses of water will do a better job because coffee dehydrates you. I have to learn that one. It has been estimated that 75% of Americans have mild chronic dehydration. We don't drink enough water. A reduction of 4 to 5% of water in the body can result in a 20 to 30% decrease in work and exercise performance. So without enough water, we can't even perform as well. A 10% decrease in water will produce significant health problems. A week without water, you're dead. Availability of water, clean water, has an enormous impact on communities in developing countries. How important is it? Just count. Every 20 seconds, a child dies because of inadequate or poor quality water. 225 children will have died in the time that it has taken us to gather this morning. There will be 4,320 in a day. Now that's the size of a small town. 3,240 in a week. In 2 weeks, you've almost got Manhattan decimated. And in a year, half the population of Kansas would be gone. Women spend 200 million hours a day collecting water. Women spend 200 million hours a day collecting water. More than 3 times more people lack water than live in the United States of America. The majority of illness is caused by fecal matter which is not adequately distributed and gotten rid of. More people have mobile phones than have toilets. Where are our priorities? The need for water, for example, and sanitation in Ethiopia is severe. Out of 85 million people, only 42% of the population has access to an improved water supply, and only 11% of the population has access to adequate sanitation services. In rural areas, these numbers drop even further. More than 3.4 million people die each year from water, sanitation, and hygienic-related diseases. Nearly all of these deaths, 99% of them, happen in developing countries. This crisis claims more lives through disease than any war claims through guns. So while we can acknowledge the tragedy of wars all across the country, the killings that happen in our cities and in homes across America, do any of you consider the lack of water supply a tragedy equal to war? I know I didn't until I really began to investigate this. 780 million people lack access to an improved water source. An American taking a 5-minute shower uses more water than the average person in a developing country uses in a day. So enormous consequences here. In many countries, women are responsible for finding and fetching water for their families, all the water they need for drinking, washing, cooking, cleaning. They walk miles, carry heavy burdens, wait for hours, and pay exorbitant prices. The work is backbreaking and all-consuming. Often the water is contaminated, even deadly. In these instances, they face an impossible choice. You either die from dehydration or risk the chance of getting a disease. They take the risk of getting disease. Once they are old enough, girls join in the product, in the effort. They spend endless hours trying to provide the basic life necessity. Women also struggle most from inadequate sanitation, the often unspoken part of the water and sanitation crisis is the word dignity. In many of these countries, women are forbidden to go to the bathroom during daylight hours. So they have to wait until it is dark. And then they have to go in a place where they are not seen. And this is the source of many rapes. So not only do they have the problem of finding a place to go to the bathroom, they have to find a place where they are safe. Around the world, fewer than one person in three has access to a toilet. In many countries, as I said, it is not acceptable for a woman to relieve herself during the day. The lack of privacy causes many girls to drop out of school when they reach puberty. The dual aspects of the water crisis, lack of water and sanitation, lock women in a cycle of poverty. They cannot attend school or earn an income. Organizations like water.org, which I got a lot of this information from, are helping to remedy the situation so that the cycle of poverty can be broken. It has provided water to hundreds of communities across Africa, Asia, and Central America. And they're trying to spread this capacity to all communities and nations that need it. And they believe that once you free girls and women from the need to collect water, they can begin to attend school more fully. And once they attend school, they will be equipped with the knowledge and hopefully a skill base which will help improve the conditions for their children, their aging parents, their family, and their friends. So it's a huge problem across the world, as I just described. It's rather bleak. But I'd like to step back and go back to Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He believed that universalism was the most important thing that people could accept in their lives so that they could live a life of equality and goodness. He believed that if there was a God, that God was a loving God, and God never would ever make a choice between this person and that person. All people are loved equally. Now, many of you people probably do no longer believe that that loving God exists because we describe such things as what's happening in Ethiopia, but the responsibility to provide that love has not gone away. Once a minister was asked, where do universalists stand? And he said, well, we don't stand anywhere. We are on the move. So I hope that this message is not one that causes you to feel despair, but one that says we need to be on the move. We need to be the people who provide love, that provides the water, that provides the food, that provides the education, that provides all the necessities that help everyone live a life of equal opportunity. Now let's go back to the pioneers. Many of our families came across Kansas and a covered wagon, or as my Nelson contingent, my great-great-grandmother walked with her two sons from Kansas City to Manhattan. They didn't have the money. But if you were to have had a wagon and had the money to have a wagon, one of the most important things on that wagon would have been the barrel of water, which they would fill at every available source, because they knew they would not make it without water. So that barrel was all important. And when pioneers found a place to settle, where did they settle? They always tried to find a place where there was a good water source along the river. Hey, Manhattan! The boat hit a sandbar and couldn't move, so Manhattan started. Lynchburg on the Smoky River, Kansas City on the Kaw River, which runs from here. So you can just look all over. All the major cities have an important water source that were developed in the 18th and 19th centuries. And if you did not live by a water source, you had to dig a well. And if any of you have tried to dig and the Flint Hill soil, you know that it is almost impossible in many places to go through the layers of rock. In the place that we live, which was homesteaded in 1870, there was a creek. There's a creek that goes along the edge of the property, and in the middle of, in the front of that creek is a huge meadow, and in that meadow there is a tree and vines and everything that stays green no matter how hot it gets. It is the well they used until after the 1940s, when it became toxic by the use of fertilizers and runoff from their animals. So those people that left in the 1960s, three generations that came from Prussia, Germany, the Bredows, they never had running water, they never had electricity, they only had a kerosene refrigerator and a wood stove and a telephone that kind of strung itself through the woods and worked sometimes. They never had a locomotive and an engine that used gasoline. They always used horses. So can you imagine what it meant for them when that well was no longer, they could no longer use it for their everyday use? There was a spring behind the barn where they had to put a bottle, and if it wasn't a dry summer, by the end of the day, a jug would be filled. How do you take a bath? How do you feed all your milk cows? A lactating milk cow takes 20 gallons of water a day to sustain its level of milk. A cattle that are raised for our consumption take 15 to 20 gallons a day. And if the creek has dried up, the spring has dried up, and the well is toxic, you can imagine how hard it must have been for these people. And we do know something about it, because we have an orchard with 18 trees and 8, 9, 10 raised beds that are at least 4 by 8, and then we have beds all over. And we have tanks. We have 3,000 gallons of tanks collecting rainwater. But that was not enough this summer. We had to haul at least 8,000 gallons of water from our neighbor, who has a well that is so magnificent. But toward the end of the summer, he had to ask us to stop coming every day, because his pressure was going down. So here I get to the crisis that I see around water that we're not even aware of in Kansas, right? We do not have, as far as I can tell from living in Waubonsie County a comprehensive water policy. We applied 3 years ago to get on the Rural Water District, but found it would cost $60,000 to drill and bring the water line to our house. So we said, we'll drill a well and spend $1,200. Well, the well produces as long as there is adequate rain. The last two summers, there have not been adequate rain. So this year, we thought, forget it. After hauling thousands and thousands of pounds of water to the fruit trees to keep them alive by hand, we were really praising those pioneers. How did they do it? We just did it in the morning and at night. They worked all day long. I don't know how they survived. They didn't have air conditioning. And if it's 114, that stone house becomes an oven. It's an oven. So I have a real appreciation for the difficulty of not having water. So we thought, okay, we'll apply to the Rural Water Number 1 District and see if we can't get water. 3 years ago, they granted us a permit, but we didn't buy it. Stupid us. They did an engineering survey of the water needs and usages, and they declined our permits, a request for a permit. We use probably 40 gallons of water a day. Everything else is from rainwater. That 40 gallons comes from our well. But when it's a dry summer, we don't have enough. The farm down the road has 300 sows. A sow that is a suckling sow takes 12 gallons of water a day. They have 300 head of cattle. That's 15 to 20 gallons of water a day. A mile and a half west of us, there's a little feedlot. Those animals take 15 to 20 gallons of water a day. So we, on a high usage day, there's 10,000 gallons of water that is being used between us, between the two farms. And they said there's not enough water for us. So I asked the water board, I said, where's the parity? Do you not have an equity policy that at least a family could have the water they need to survive? They said that doesn't count. So even in Waubonsie County, even in Kansas, and I don't really blame the people on the water board, they're all old farmers. They know how important it is to have an adequate water supply so they can feed their livestock, so they can have water for their garden, so that they can irrigate in times when it's necessary. But if you get on that line a little bit late, forget it. You have to haul water. So it seems to me that on many levels that water is really misunderstood and we do not appreciate the immense gift of it. Just recently, last week, the rain started to fall and I was so happy because in a year we've planted drought-resistant low-mow seed in the front of the old house three times. And both times the grass kind of started to come up and then the hot weather just fried it. And so 10 days ago, we planted again, thinking it's cooler weather. And then one morning, I heard some patter of rain on the roof, and everything in me relaxed. I thought, oh, wow, rain, rain, glorious rain. We won't have to water that grass today, which takes forever because we have no water pressure coming from the tank. Dribble, 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 dribble. 4 hours of watering that 3,000 square foot patch. The rain stopped. We're in a cycle of extended drought. So that brings up the question of global warming. Do we take that seriously? Or do we pretend that it's not something that bothers us? Do we listen to the needs of people across the world who have inadequate water, but there is enough water if we were to use it wisely? What do we do about all of the stuff that's creating the possibility of global warming, that is creating global warming? How committed are we to saving our most fundamental gift, water, Without water, we can't survive. Oxygen, too. They're both related. The Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, our national and international organization that brings aid across the world, recently had a success in California. And everyone who has watched the news over the years knows that there are incredible water battles going on in the state of California. They're always arguing over water. And the UU legislative initiative, headed by a classmate of mine, the Reverend Lindy Ramsden, has worked with the legislature in California and Governor Brown and passed a law which absolutely determines that having water is a basic human right. There were towns and villages, if you will, in California that were so poor that they could not afford water. And that was okay with the people who had the power. It took people like you and I getting together, going before our senators and congresswomen and men, and saying, we need to do something about this. And all those Unitarian Universalists in California managed to have a law passed that now guarantees equal access to water for all people, for your basic needs. What is it that keeps us from mobilizing with such power to do similar things in Kansas in regards to education? All kinds of things. We could name 10 issues, the arts. Is this just a country club, or is this a place where we actually make a difference? What are our values? Do we really appreciate the gifts that we are given? How do we honor them? These are all important questions we need to ask ourselves without beating ourselves up over them, because we can't solve everything, but without awareness and without some action, we are part of the problem. And I believe that we can be a better part of the solution. So what can you do? I think on a basic level, we just take water for granted. Now when Chuck and I go to a Marriott, we take 5-minute showers and we let that warm water run across us. At home, it's run in, turn the water on, turn it off, soap up, turn the water on, rinse, and get out of there. So we use maybe a gallon or two for a shower. Boy, is it nice when you can have a warm shower, especially like this morning when it was kind of cold. So just gratitude. Basic gratitude for this incredible gift that allows us to live. And if you have old-fashioned toilets that use a lot of water every time you flush, please consider if you're able to purchase low-flush toilets. It makes a big difference. And on a warm day, you can turn the shower off and soap up and turn it back on. You don't need to have the water running on you the whole time you're in the shower. You can. That's up to you. I'm not trying to guilt trip you here, but it is something to pay attention to. And I remember this summer visiting Thea Nietfeld. Many of you know her. She is the minister at the Salina Unitarian Universalist Fellowship and helps out the Hutchinson Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It was in the Blastovanovich part of this summer when just to walk out of the car, get me inside. And we had been watering and I'd visited my mother and had time to stop to visit Thea on our way back. And we talked about the drought and how hard it was and how it was easier to stay in the house than to go for a walk because it was so darn hot and blah, blah, blah. And then I was talking to her about watering all the plants and poor me. And then she said, you know what I've started to do? I thought I needed to be a part of the solution. And she just has a small house and a small yard. She goes, I think that beautiful silver maple tree needs help. So every day after I do my dishes, I bring out the dishwater and the rinse water and water that tree. She goes, I know it's probably foolish. People think, what in the hell is she doing out there watering that tree with a little pan? And you know, one of the effects of drought is that trees are weakened and they die. Maybe not this year, but next year. So that little effort, that little I want to do something, probably has much more power than we would like to, than what we believe. So I just thought, wow, what a marvelous image. If we could all just do something like that. And I can remember when I moved to Boston to study mime right after college. I rented a flat in Somerville, which is where the poor people lived, and I had a roommate whose name was Jeff, and he had the most interesting way of doing dishes that I've ever seen, and it just drove me crazy. He would put a bunch of soap on a sponge, he would turn the water on until it got hot, and then he would wash each fork, each spoon, each knife under the running water. And then he would get to the plates, and then he'd get the cups, and then he'd get the pan, and the water would be running for 15 minutes. Finally, I said, Jeff, would you please use a pan to wash your stuff in? You're driving me crazy. And he goes, oh, I never thought about it. Here's someone who has a master's degree from MIT, is a technologically brilliant person, but never considered how much water he was letting just go right down that drain. So it's in big things and little things and in-between things where appreciation can well up and we can provide our expression of gratitude. So how do you value water? What have been your experiences of either swimming in a wonderful Vermont pond when it is just so deliciously cool on a warm day, or seeing plants die because you just don't have the water to water them? The whole gambit. How does water impact your life? How do you value it?
Michael, do you want to do the offertory and let people think about that for a little bit?
Oh, marvelous idea.
Ann Cowan, I don't quite know the significance of this story, but I think of it often when I think about our priorities and water. When I lived in Nicaragua in the 80s, when the United States was spending millions of dollars each year for many years to change a government there, where there was suffering on both sides of the battles, I attended a ceremony, a celebration in a barrio there, which had to do with water, and it was a huge celebration. The archbishop was there, the mayor was there, an ambassador was there, one other international and myself were there, so they had my friend speak, since we sort of stood out, we must have been important, and the ceremony was to turn on the first public faucets of clean water in that barrio. Seven faucets were made to work. This was a gift from the Libyan government, a big enemy of ours at the time. The Libyan ambassador was there to help turn on this water. It was a huge celebration, made the front page of the newspaper, and it was only a few thousand people that were affected. But the $7,000 that were spent on those seven public faucets was a tremendous benefit to those people. And I think that has something to do with priorities.
Thank you, Ann. That's a great story.
Bryce Hobrock. In my view, the world does not suffer from a lack of water. Suffers from excess population. As we may lack water management policies, we also lack many other policies, such as population, that continue to draw from the water we have And the crisis is going to be a combination of lack of water and too many people.
I have several ideas, Christopher Renner. Back before I finished up with Community Bridge on the radio, I had Chuck Rice from K-State come on and talk, and he's the local expert on global climate change. And his predictions, along with Ronnie Yonke's predictions, were not very favorable for us as a species, because if this is really happening, and it looks like it is, I mean, all scientific data points that it is, Kansas is going to become what Southern Texas is today in about 25 to 35 years. And I think this summer we got a taste of what we could be in store for us. So there's some real issues there. There isn't a statewide water policy. The policy is formulated by the people who own the most livestock. And so the Ogallala Aquifer is being drained to raise corn for ethanol fuel, which is just stark raving mad. But that's, if you look out in northwest Kansas, they have these huge cornfields, and all summer long they were being watered by the aquifer instead of going to people. The other issue, which is interesting, because Bolivia had privatized water, and the people revolted when they started getting water bills for $200 and $300, you know, like half their annual income. But that is what corporations have been looking at, is the privatization of water. And that is going to be a huge push in this country as well. You can already hear the rumblings of it at our city commission, because they realize that who's going to control water over the course of the next 50 years are the people who are going to live and those who are going to die. And so corporations have been investing a lot of money in buying up water rights, both in this country and in the developing world. And as concerned citizens, we have to be aware of that. I think we've been very uninformed about it. Finally, there is a resource that I would refer people to, the New Internationalist magazine, newinternationalist.org, if you want to Google it, had a complete issue on the water issue. I can't remember if it's been in the last year or within the last 2 years. It was the most informative information I've read on this issue on a global size, because it's a huge issue, and we just have no concept of how difficult this issue is.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Charlie Campthorne. I'm the only person in the room who has already made a decision and taken an action based on your talk today, Michael. I went to the bathroom, and we ran out of water back in the 80s on our farm and hauled water for several years and had growing kids at home then. And one of the things, someone taught us this little vulgar poem: when it's yellow, let it mellow, and when it's brown, flush it down. So I let it mellow. The interesting thing is I actually stood there a moment and thought about it, because really the point of my little joke is that we're going to have to do some behavioral changes, and we're going to have to take some risks. And what I risk is that I thought, surely outside the door is going to be somebody else, and they're going to think, Charlie Kempthorne is so ill-bred that he, you know. Remember your mother saying, don't forget to flush, that kind of thing? Okay,
put the toilet seat down. Mm-hmm.
I was just going to share, yesterday my parents shared with me how many trees in Texas had died. Was it a couple million?
300 million, mostly oak trees.
Well, yeah, I'm John Bryan, and we have a farm in East Texas, and we are blessed normally with around 40, 45 inches of rainfall a year. And we have also clay soils that we have tanks that, but last year those tanks, a lot of them went dry. And we had to do some enlargement. We also have a broiler farm. We raise chickens for Pilgrim's Pride. And our two deep wells that normally produce a lot of water Before we got on a water district, last September, we were able to get on a water district, but the fire department hauled us 2,500 gallons of water a day for 3 or 4 days so the chickens didn't die. And so we are very mindful of our responsibilities and try to do good stewardship with our water supplies.
Stacy Brofman. I grew up in the Chihuahuan Desert of extreme West Texas and eastern New Mexico, and so I know what it's like to feel the joy of when a rain comes, and we used to always run outside and run around, and it would be warm because it was always so hot there. But I'll tell you, I learned real quick what some people value and what they don't. You can drive on Interstate 10, and you can go past the cardboard shacks of the slums of Juarez, Mexico. And there's people there that don't have water. They don't have anything, really. But just across that highway, Lee Trevino always had a fantastically manicured golf course to play his 18 holes on. To this day, you know, my yard usually stands out for a multitude of negative reasons, but but one of them is I won't water my lawn. If the grass dies, it dies. I don't have to mow it less. But I can't stand the thought that each time I might have a beautifully lush, artificially watered lawn, you know, that somebody else is going without a drink. So, yeah, that's, you know, one decision. And then one last thing, when I remember watching with my kids Sesame Street, and they used to have a song called Are You a Water Waster Woo? And it was talking about not leaving the water running when you're brushing your teeth. But, you know, we've got to teach people what's important, and people are much more important than a few blades of grass.
Jim Chanteau. Remember reading a few years ago a book, Six Beverages That Changed the World. And the premise of the book, the reason that the author, who's English, wrote this book, was that from the earliest times that humans have gathered together, the water has not been fit to drink. And so in order for humans to survive as communities, we had to figure out ways that we could drink something liquid that wouldn't harm us. And he starts out with the earliest known of accounts of civilization in the Middle East, in particular the Egyptian civilization, and pointed out that much of what remains there today, the Great Pyramids and the sculptures and so forth, were built by workers who were not slaves, but rather were working for the opportunity to get beer, because beer was safe to drink, because of the way, of course, the alcohol. And I've often thought since that the problems in the Middle East, I wonder if it wouldn't be solved by beer.
Well, I think you should put that forth before the UN. Well, we've run out of time. I thank everyone for reflecting on water and its gifts and its, you know, paucity and all that stuff. But let us now sing hymn number 100, I've Got Peace Like a River.
Ready? I've got peace like a river, I've got peace like a river, I've got peace like a river in my soul. I've got peace like a river, I've got peace like a river, I've got peace like a river in my soul. I've got joy like a fountain, I've got joy like a fountain, I've got joy like a fountain in my soul. I've got joy like a fountain, I've got joy like a fountain, I've got joy like a fountain in my soul. I've got love like an ocean, I've got love like an ocean, I've got love like an ocean in my soul.
I've got love like an ocean, I've got love like an ocean. I've got love like an ocean in my soul. I've got pain like an arrow, I've got pain like an arrow. I've got pain like an arrow in my soul. I've got pain like an arrow, I've got pain like an arrow. I've got pain like an arrow in my soul. I've got tears like the raindrops, I've got tears like the raindrops. I've got tears like the raindrops in my soul. I've got tears like raindrops, I've got tears like raindrops. I've got tears like the raindrops in my soul. I've got strength like a mountain, I've got strength like a mountain. I've got strength like a mountain in my soul. I've got strength like a mountain, I've got strength like a mountain. I've got strength like a mountain in my soul.
Let me share these closing words. Water flows from high in the mountains. Water runs deep in the earth. Miraculously, water comes to us and sustains all life. Water and sun green these plants. When a rain of compassion falls, even a desert becomes an immense green ocean. Thich Nhat Hanh. And for those of you who are interested in taking the Deepening UU class, we'll meet here at 12:15. Go in peace.